Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, The Downfall of Savari Muni, Text Number 55. Taswa Patyor Maharaja. Niriksha Dhyatmikam Kim Gitim. Anvius Tat Bhavena Angi Agnim Shantam Ivarchisaha Ta. All the wives of Savari Muni Swapatyu with their own husband Maharaja, O King Parikshit, Niriksha, observing, Adyatmikaim, spiritual, Gatim, progress, Anviyu, followed, Tat Prabhavena, by the influence of their husband. Although they're unfit by the influence of their husband, they could also go to the spiritual world. Agnim, the fire. Shantam, completely merged. Eva, like. Archisaha, the flames. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Homage, Parikshit, by observing the husband progressing to spiritual existence, Savari Muni's wives were also able to enter the spiritual world by his spiritual power, just as the flames of a fire cease when the fire is extinguished. Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9.32, Sriyo Vaishas Tata Shudras Tepi Yanti Puram Gitim. Women are not considered very powerful in following spiritual principles. But if a woman is fortunate enough to get a suitable husband who is spiritually advanced, and if she always engages in his service, she also gets the same benefit as her husband. Here is clearly said that the wives of Savari Muni also entered the spiritual world by the influence of their husband. They were unfit, but because they were faithful followers of their husband, they also entered the spiritual world with him. Thus a woman should be a faithful servant of her husband, and if the husband is spiritually advanced, the woman will automatically get the opportunity to enter the spiritual world. This end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the ninth canto, sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Downfall of Savari Muni. Amar Priksha, by observing their husband progressing in spiritual existence, Savari Muni's wives were also able to enter the spiritual world by his spiritual power, just as the flames of a fire cease when the fire is extinguished. In modern society, people take this is a criticism. In other words, in modern society, their propaganda is that everyone is equal. Everyone is equal, but not everyone is equal materially. Everyone is equal spiritually, and the important factor is progress towards realizing the equality of spiritual, not artificially declaring everything is equally materially. Now, that's just the way the material world is made, that there's inequality. We, for instance, looking at it from the mundane point of view of astrology, because astrology is not some superstitious, imaginary science. Well, we say science, at least I say in the Vedic literature, it's a science, is actually based upon natural principles. that in the material world, whether we like it or not, whether we acknowledge it or not, that there are natural energies. We're actually living in a world of energy. We're not living in an imaginary world that we make up that changes according to our mental concoction. In the material world, according to Bhagavad Gita, Bhumir apanlo vayu kamano buddha eva cha ahankara iti yame bina prakriti ashida. There happens to be five gross and three subtle energies. In other words, these energies are not what we generally imagine them to be or we classify them as. We have, for instance, subtle energy, which is ether, which sound travels in. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is extensively explained. We perceive ether through sound. Because if there was no ether, then how would the sound be traveling? It obviously doesn't travel in the air. Because air can only go so far. But ether, you can connect ether immediately through, for instance, a radio. Obviously, the sound of this microphone that's being broadcast on the internet is not going through the air. Does anyone think it's going through the air? No, it's going through the ether. And therefore, ether is a much different element than the air is. But air is an active principle. Air means movement. Things move in the material world because of air. As we have personal experience, all of us, things move in our body because of air. They go in one point and go out because of air. Even our mind is working under the... Even all the energies in our body work because of air. It says that the soul is situated on the five airs within the body, namely prana, apana, udana, samana, and vyana. These are what move everything in the body. And even the mind is, well, you know, this is a channel even for the mind to move in. Now, so air is an active principle. As a matter of fact, it is the active principle that moves everything in the material world. And then, by a transformation, we get fire. Fire is the principle of transformation. Air moving produces friction, which produces fire, and fire transforms things. And after the transformations come about, when things cool down, then water is produced. And from water, when water becomes solidified by transformation, then it becomes earth, solid. Water is a cohesive principle that keeps things together. Fire is a transformative principle. Air is the movable principle. And earth is the substantial or the solid principle. It's all relative. In other words, everything in the material world is relative. What's fire to one living entity is actually cooling to another living entity. If you happen to be a bacteria living on the bottom of the ocean, where the temperature where you live in, your environment, is 600 degrees centigrade, if it drops 100 degrees, you die from for the cold. If there's a climate change in the bottom of the ocean, it drops only 100 degrees to 500 degrees centigrade, you become very cold if you're a bacteria and you die. Now we can't even live in 200 degrees centigrade. Yes?
What's that in Celsius?
That is Celsius. Centigrade is Celsius. For us, it's rather warm. For the living entities living on the bottom of the ocean, it's normal, everyday temperature. Gets up to 7, then you have to put on the air conditioner. 700 degrees. So it's all relative. For us, 600 is impossible. Even 200 is impossible. But for them, it's normal. So these five elements, earth, water, fire, and ether, are all actually just different vibrations coming from sound. Because everything is just vibration into a world where a quick vibration is called air, a little less is called fire, a little less is called water, a little less is called earthy. And there are all different varieties of these things. In any case, they form together in the universe. For instance, we have the sun. Everyone will have to admit the sun is made out of fire. And the sun is moving in its orbit because of air. So the sun, there's an influence of air, there's fire, and the sun is the principle in the material universe of steadiness. Every day the sun wakes up, or gets up, or rises over the horizon, exactly in schedule. And it goes down at the end of the day, exactly in schedule. So for us, it's perceived as being rising and falling. According to the Vedas, what's happening is the sun's moving in its orbit around Mount Meru. But exactly on time, steady feature. So the sun in the horoscope, for instance, which is not just some superstition, but it represents the masculine principle of steadiness. And the moon represents, the moon is made out of water and earth, and it represents in the horoscope, the emotional side of the person, the changeable side, the feeling side. Now, everyone happens to have a sun and moon in their horoscope. It's not that men only have suns and the women have moons. Everyone has a sun and moon. So everyone has a proportionate amount of influence by these different energies. And all the other planets, whether it be Jupiter or Saturn or Mars or Venus, they have their masculine side and they have their feminine side. But only the sun and moon have their own. The sun doesn't have a masculine house and a feminine house. It only has a masculine house. And the moon only has a feminine house. They're considered the king and queen. So in our psychology, or in Bhagavad Gita, for instance, if we jump over to the Bhagavad Gita, we have Tesham Sadatam Yuktanam Bhajantam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddha Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayanti Te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So there we have again two divisions, which we have naturally, namely the subtle divisions of intelligence and mind. So we need both of them, and everyone has both of them, but just to different degrees, I say, different proportions. So the steadiness is tesham sadatam yuktanam, always engaged. Bhajantam priti purvakam, and with enthusiasm, priti, with affection, with enthusiasm. So who, as it says in the purport in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we have to have religion along with knowledge or intelligence. They can't. In order that religion without knowledge, without proper perspective, is simply fanaticism or sentiment. And sentiment and knowledge without feeling, without religion, is simply dry speculation. So they're supposed to go together. That's why you have naturally men and women are supposed to work together. They're not in competition with each other. It is not that one is ultimately more important than the other, because in terms of spiritual advancement, the idea of seeing things properly is to develop the sentiment of devotion, the feeling of devotion. The problem in the material world is that it's material. Material means not that there's such a thing as material world. Material world means when we don't use our mind and intelligence properly, then it becomes the material world. Otherwise, it's the spiritual world we're living in. Because everything came from Krishna, therefore everything must be spiritual. There's no such thing as Krishna has the spiritual world, and then there's another energy called the material world. Although it is a different energy, because Krishna has unlimited energies. But this energy is also spiritual. And when we misuse it, that's called material. And when we utilize it properly, then we see it is, then it's perceived to us and experienced to us as spiritual. So utilizing properly means that one's intelligence should be directed towards Shastra. Yakshastra vidim utsrija vartate kamakarata asasidim avapnoti nasukam naparamgitim. That for one who gives up Shastra, he can have neither peace, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. So this is progress. In other words, Krishna doesn't, he's been speaking Bhagavad Gita since time immemorial, which is a long time. So he has the book down quite well. He knows exactly what to say. If he ever made a mistake, which is probably, he never did. But even if he did make a mistake, he's corrected it since time immemorial. So, peace, happiness, the supreme destination, they follow one another. If the mind is peaceful, then we can enter into Brahman and become happy. And then from Brahman, from realization of our eternality, we can, and with the happiness of engaging in spiritual life, we can become qualified to enter into the spiritual world, the supreme destination. So everything depends upon tasma shastra pramanam te karya karya vyastito yatva shastra vinadoktam karma kartam iharasi. That one should know what is duty and what is not duty by the direction of shastra, and knowing such one's duty, one should act so that one can gradually be elevated. So everything depends upon knowing shastra. And shastra is not something you just know. You read it, you memorize it, I know Bhagavad Gita, because I've memorized it. Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveda Yutsavaha, Mamaikam Bandhavais Chaiva, Kema Kuravata Sanjaya, Dhritarashtra Vacha, Drishvaptu Pandivanukam, Yudam Duryodhanastata, Acharyam Upasangam Yam, Raja Vachanam Advavi. And if I can go the whole through Bhagavad Gita, now I know the Bhagavad Gita, and I just throw the Bhagavad Gita away, and then I go for the Bhagavatam, so I can know the Bhagavatam. That's not what knowing the book is, Bhagavad Gita. If we actually knew one word in the Bhagavad Gita, one syllable, we'd be self-realized. So to enter into Bhagavad Gita, we need intelligence. We need a certain spiritual intelligence. Now, material intelligence means for sense gratification, we can, relatively speaking, people may have more or less intelligence how to utilize our body and mind for sense gratification. That intelligence, material nature, is very happy to provide us if that's what we want. And therefore, in modern society, there is a competition who has the most material intelligence. Who's going to hell the quickest? I'm not necessarily hell, but who's actually able to control the material nature for sense gratification the most expertly? And if men misuse their senses, then they lose their intelligence, just like everyone loses their intelligence if they act for sense gratification. That's Bhagavad Gita. Dhyayato vishyampum sam sangas teshu pujayate. Anyone who follows the direction of their senses, contemplates the objects, follows lust and greed and anger, becomes more and more deluded, more and more forgetful of their actual nature. They lose their spiritual intelligence, and they work in the material world, etc., etc. So some people may lose their more intelligence and become less capable of lording over the material world. Some people may gain material intelligence and apparently become more capable of lording over the material world. Man or woman, it's all relative. But from spiritual life, from the point of view of spiritual, by birth, by general nature, men are supposed to have more intelligence. It's all, of course, it's all relative. It's not that every man has spiritual intelligence and every woman doesn't have spiritual intelligence. It's all just relative to one another. But relatively speaking, men are supposed to be born with a masculine nature. That's just genetics. That's the way, that's how it's formed. And masculine nature means they have more fire and they have more air. They have more illuminating power to understand Shastra, if that's what they use it for. And what is Shastra? What is the aim of Shastra? It's to develop spiritual feeling. The aim of Shastra is not to see the world as it is so you can control it better. The aim of Shastra is to see the material world so you can serve it better in Krishna consciousness. So women may not understand that because they may be, by nature, more driven by their sentiment. And if that wasn't true, it would be a very horrible place to live in the material world. Matter of fact, they couldn't be in the material world because who would take care of the children? If you had a child and you kept on telling the child when it was, you know, just like we had this little baby here crawling all around all the time. So if someone went to the child and keep on saying, hey kid, your hands are dirty, go and wash it. If that was, chant Hare Krishna, why are you just wasting your time crawling around here? Do something practical. I mean, that's an extreme way of seeing things of what's the purpose of life is and how to achieve it. Hey, grow up, kid. You're only 3 months old. Do something, grow up. I'm trying. No, grow up. So the ladies, and also the men, it's not just, I mean, in the spiritual world, we have Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj. Mother Jasoda is cooking and making butter. Along with the gopis. We don't find Nanda Maharaj cooking and making butter. He's herding cows before Krishna becomes a coward boy. So is one better? No, actually in the according to the spiritual way of discerning things, Mother Jasoda is considered the superior devotee in Vatsali Rasa. She's first and Nanda Maharaj is second. So in the spiritual world, the service is considered first because it's completely, simply love for Krishna. There's no need to tell Mother Jasoda to love Krishna and how to do it. It's spontaneous. She just loves Krishna. And that's the whole aim of using our intelligence, is to develop love. Tesham sadatam yuktana bhajantam priti. First is steady engagement, and then to develop priti, love. But one has to come first. In other words, pure intelligence has to come first, control the mind, so it's fixed on Krishna, and then love develops. So pure, steady intelligence means steady engagement in devotional service to produce love. So if there's someone, if men by nature have the ability not to be so much influenced by their emotions, be carried away by the emotions, at least they're supposed to, of course, it's very doubtful in present society. It's not so apparent. Because for some parts of the world especially, they've given up their intelligence. And anyhow, men are born with that natural proclivity, relatively speaking, then they can use that intelligence to engage in devotional service and develop love, which women should be able to display by their nature even more than men are. In other words, men can understand this Shastra intellectually, and then if they have the association of women who are engaged in service, then they're inspired to dovetail that they can actually see the example of service, and therefore they can become inspired to develop that sentiment of service to Krishna also. They can understand what the Shastra says of service if they have a wife who's submissive. If they have a wife who's always competing with them, then their minds become agitated, and they have no example usually of service unless they're highly intelligent. So with that service attitude and the pure consciousness of the man who can appreciate the pure service attitude and explain it to the woman that her service attitude should be directed towards Krishna and not towards simply her family, material perception of her family and her house, material perception, but can give the lady the spiritual perception that her family is also Krishna's servants, and the house belongs to Krishna, etc., and everything should be engaged in the deity service, then her natural propensity to a service is engaged in devotional service. And the man can take example from the wife of how to engage in devotional service and make progress also. So it's a, unless the man is so highly intelligent, he's liberated, like Sabari Muni was, so that wife or no wife, he'd still be engaged in devotional service. In any case, it's a, I hope I'm not getting too confusing here, but by using our intelligence, we should be able to see that devotional service is the aim, and if we have if the wife is faithful, then she can accept that, and when she sees her husband engaged in devotional service, then she can also become inspired to control her mind and senses and simply engage them in devotional service too, without getting deviated for sense gratification. In any case, it's a cooperative between the man and the wife. The man studies Shastra, understands, and of course the woman could also study Shastra. It's not that it's only for men, especially in this age, and come to the conclusion that whatever sentiment we have, however strong or however not strong it may be, should be engaged in Krishna's service. So it's developed to the point where we're engaged in regulated devotional service, and we come to the platform, as Krishna says, just fix your mind upon me and engage all your intelligence in me, thus you'll live with me always without a doubt. So everyone has to fix their intelligence on Krishna and engage their mind in Krishna. The man has more intelligence to understand that, and therefore if he conveys that and it follows that, what is it? Atachitam samadhatum nasakshnosi maistiram abhyasaya yogena tato mamishandhum duranjaya. If you can't fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga, and this way try to develop the desire to obtain me. So when one is born as a woman, where the moon becomes more prominent, because we can see women have cycles, although nowadays they're claiming in America, at least in some parts of even Europe probably, that men also have cycles, although they do have cycles, but not like women have them, because they're governed by the moon more. And men are supposed to be more fiery, and that fire gives them illumination or intelligence. The cycles make one more moody or feeling. So if that intelligence is dovetailed to control, even if there are cycles, one still sees things in relation to Krishna in all circumstances, then the intelligence can control the mind and fix it, and it can be fixed on Krishna. So whoever we are, whatever body we're in, we should try to understand Shastra, but it's just the men are supposed to have a better ability to understand Shastra and reach the conclusion that everything should be engaged in Krishna's service. So if a woman reaches that conclusion better than a man, then she could help the man also. And if the man reaches that conclusion, he can help the woman. And in any case, they're supposed to cooperate with each other towards that conclusion. And if they come to that level of simply engaging according to their natural proclivity, and it's natural, of course nowadays, what's natural may not be so natural, because we don't have Mother Jasoda, we don't have hardly anyone cooking or churning butter or making garlands and things like that. It's like, and we don't have men who are generally so responsible in the material world, who are earning living in a brahminical or a, you could say, a normal way, like farming and maintaining the cows, and or even if they're doing normal everyday work, which is necessary, like making pots or something like that. Everything has become very complicated. And therefore, women have taken up men's roles, and men have taken up women's roles. It's all become kind of like, and most of them have taken up completely unnecessary roles. Things that are just completely wasting time. Just to keep, if they're engaged at all. So the conclusion is, Subbarimuni had great spiritual intelligence. He understood that he should engage strictly in Krishna's service. He had really realized that. Therefore, he fixed his mind upon Krishna. And he was able to, by his association, the women realized that they should also fix their mind upon Krishna. And they all went back to the spiritual world. Although, if they didn't have such an example of Subbarimuni, they probably would have taken care of their grandchildren instead, or their great-grandchildren. But instead, they saw my husband's going back to the spiritual world. We might as well go back with him. Just like there's this movie called Tukaram. You've seen Tukaram?
Yes.
Has anyone seen the movie called Tukaram? Anyhow, in this movie, Tukaram was a great devotee in South India, and he was leading the Harinam movement there. But his wife she was a devotee, but she wasn't so devoted. So at the end of the movie, because Tukaram was such a great devotee, Krishna personally came. Well, he didn't come. A Vaikuntha airplane came to take him back to the spiritual world. So he ran into his house, and because all the villagers saw the transcendental airplane, to take Tukaram back to the spiritual world. So he ran into the house, and he told his wife that there's a spiritual airplane to take us back to the spiritual world. Come and join me. Come, let's go together to the spiritual world. And his wife said, well, I'll come, but I have to finish some of my household chores first. So Tukaram realized that the plane wasn't going to wait for him, so he ran out, got into the airplane. And his wife finished the chores, and said they started to run towards the airplane as it flew away. So we shouldn't miss the airplane. If it's there, go and get it. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for this explanation of Shastra. You just mentioned how Yashoda Mata is actually on a higher level of Bhav, if you could say so, in the spiritual world. And my question is just if you could explain a little further how it comes that her love is more spontaneous than the love of Nanda Bhav.
No, it doesn't say spontaneous, Nanda Maharaj. It's like if you have the Himalayan mountains, one mountain may be 100 meters higher than the other, but from our perspective, it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. It's just according to intensity. It's just the position of mother protecting the child is more intense than the position of the father protecting the child or raising the child. The mother is always with the child, always looking after the child, always in anxiety about the child. So therefore, the intensity of love is developing more. Sometimes it happens, Nanda Maharaj gets the chance, like after the Damodara Leela, Krishna, Nanda Maharaj said, who did this to you, Krishna? And Krishna said, Mom, she tied me up. And then he jumped on Nanda Maharaj's lap, you know, protect me from Mom. So mother just sort of became completely disturbed. You know, I almost killed Krishna. I'm such a rascal. She went into hiding for some time, fasting, and all her servants were fasting too. And Nanda Maharaj enjoyed Krishna's affection, solo affection, for some time. And then Nanda Maharaj realized that this is just artificial, that Krishna is suffering because he doesn't have his mother. So therefore he said, Nanda Maharaj said to Krishna one day, after a day or two, he said, you know, anyone who mistreats any of the subjects in my kingdom, you know, I'm going to raise his hand and I'm going to, you know, take care of them. So Krishna became very disturbed hearing that Mother De Soto was threatened by Nanda Maharaj. And he jumped out of Nanda Maharaj's lap, and he ran to Mother De Soto to take shelter of Mother De Soto. I mean, that was Nanda Maharaj's aim, is to get Krishna back to his normal state again. He realized it was artificial, has separated from Mother De Soto. So, Nanda Maharaj is second in the spiritual world in terms of Vatsalya Rasa, but he's not a very distant second. And others, he's not the only. There's an order that's explaining the nectar devotion, and it goes after that is Nanda Maharaj's seven wives, and then it comes to Devaki, then Vasudeva. So there's a whole order of intensity. But for us, if we were just Gargamuni in the spiritual world, which the last one mentioned, we'd be quite ecstatic. I mean, we'd be quite happy. Anything else? Yes.
So what is the best way to create a peaceful mind?
There's only one way. Simple. Fix it on Krishna. Well, it's Krishna. And that means to understand three things, because it gets a little bit more complicated, a little bit more elaborate. That Krishna is the enjoyer. Krishna is the controller. Krishna is the enjoyer. And whatever we have is all by Krishna's mercy. He's the friend. He's supplying everything to us. So he's the controller, he's the enjoyer, and he's the ultimate well-wisher and friend of everyone. Then we can actually have a peaceful mind. Otherwise it's impossible. That's Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 29. Explains that. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, as here it said that wife, if they follow husband, they also go to spiritual world. What if even if they don't do like spiritual practice, or the husband also does spiritual practice, and they just, I don't know. What if they eat meat, or what if they?
How can they go to the spiritual world? There's no meat there. They go to the spiritual world and they see a Sarabi cow and they get hungry. wouldn't work. Wouldn't be allowed. No, it means that they follow the husband. Follow the husband doesn't mean, it means they serve the husband. They follow him the best they can. And he, by his example and by his association, they automatically become elevated by their service. It's not so that they just serve, they serve breakfast to the husband, the rest of the day they're out dancing somewhere at the discotheque. They're dedicated to service, and therefore they get all the qualities by that service attitude.
So it's like they are aligned to husband, then they also get...
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, they advance in intelligence also, but the husband is advancing, so they're constantly, advancing, both of them. By him, by his practice, and they by their service attitude. It's not that the wife doesn't know anything. She remains a dodo at the end of her life. She goes back to the spiritual world. She also understands Krishna, just like we can see in the talks between Kardama Muni and his wife, and Devahuti, and then later on Devahuti and Kapiladeva. She also understands the instructions of her son, Kapiladeva. Not that she remains foolish, she actually becomes learned, enlightened, that she's the eternal servant of Krishna.
And one more question, a little bit fiery. What if it's just the opposite? Like usually in our society it is. How to make it like this, that both of them are satisfied, that woman, if they're generally more intelligent and fiery, how shall they become more following husband and like this?
Well, these are general principles. You know, as I said, anyone could utilize their natural propensity towards elevation or towards degradation. If the man is trying to utilize his natural propensity towards elevation, then if the wife has more intelligence in some area, then he'll follow it. So it's not a set principle. Everyone is just trying to understand Shastra. So if someone has more understanding, clear understanding of Shastra, then we follow it. It's not a competition who's controller. That's mundane. If that's the conception, then it's just mundane. The difference between that is who has a clear understanding of Shastra and is following it more strictly. And that also includes, ultimately, as I said, you go from knowledge to perception to conviction to skill to character. So we find Gandhari and Dhritarashtra, she had a better perception. She was more strictly followed. She had a better conception of Krishna consciousness than Dhritarashtra. And therefore he benefited from her association. So it's not 100%, you know, down the line. But the whole thing is, if one is actually an adherent to the Shastra, then one will become humble. It's not that the man becomes, I'm the controller, you listen to me. No, he also becomes humble, he becomes a servant. He becomes more of a servant. Because he's more of a servant, he inspires service from others too. And the wife naturally has the women naturally have a tendency towards service, so when they see their husband as a good servant of Krishna, they become inspired to become a good servant too. And when the husband sees that the wife is a very nice servant to Krishna, if he's actually a devotee, then he becomes a better servant to Krishna too.
Collaboration over competition.
Right. That's it. Okay. For going back to this, for serving Krishna. Because after all, we're not this body. It's just a question of utilizing whatever our tendency is in service to Krishna. Mother Jasoda is churning the butter, but she's not thinking, you know, when am I going to get done with this churning butter and cooking for Krishna? You know, let me do something practical, like herding cows or something. Yeah. And Nandamari said, I'm sick of these cows, I just want to cook. They both have natural propensities. But that may not be so true in the present world. So a man could also cook for Krishna, and a woman could also herd cows for Krishna. But it's for Krishna, that's all.
Thank you.
Kala Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.